everyone. Welcome to another episode of One Mom to Another. My name is Cindy Anderson, author of the book, One Mom to Another, and I'm really excited about this episode. I have with me all four of my sons, and we are going to talk about raising boys. In birth order, because in our family we do everything, seems like we always have that pecking order.
Michael was 17 before he got to sit up front.
Yeah. I don't think, shotgun. Michael, have you ever been able to sit in the front seat?
My first day by myself, I got in the car and you said, get to the very back.
I think, what are you doing up here? Michael just, even afterwards, it was like, you know, like the prisoner syndrome or whatever. He just assumed backseat middle on the hump. Like, that's it. Like, that's like, even though he could sit in the front seat, he was just backseat in the middle on the hump.
Boom. I think fetal position on the back bench is what I usually assumed.
Do you remember the time, though, Michael, where you actually were in the backpack of that, of the minivan, where the cargo goes?
Which time?
Kids in the car?
Yeah. I was saying, like, which time were you referring to? So I could a couple of them.
That's good. Well,
no, but Michael, you never had to do back of a station wagon staring out the back at the traffic like the people would. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like the seats face backwards. Yeah. And so it was super awkward. A car would pull up behind you and it's you staring at the people driving. I mean, like
those seats,
red lights were fun.
Those seats basically said reserved for Daniel and Eric, right? Like, we spent so much of our childhood in the backseat of that blue.
Playing those awkward eye contact with people going 35.
Like magnet checkers. You remember, like, little magnet checkers? Yeah.
Or that
Michael, you missed out. Yeah, you missed out.
That was before screens and any. I mean, that was the entertainment in the car, right?
Was it the St. Louis trip where I had that same audiobook on tape that I made you all listen to, like, over and over and over again?
I don't remember that one.
No.
Oh, man. Oh,
man. Well, with that as an introduction,
that's great. So these are my sons. We have William, Eric, Daniel, and Michael. I'm really excited about this topic. So let's just kind of start at the beginning. And I want to, raising boys have been known for and have been driving their mothers crazy with their escapades and capers since the beginning of time. Let's kind of talk about escapades and capers.
Our escapades or our kids' escapades?
Either one. I mean, I can start, or do you guys have one? I mean, there was the dent in the wall.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
I say you knew about one, Mom.
So this was a regional church meeting that that Mom and Dad wanted to attend in peace rather than taking seven children.
Now hold on. Also, before this, hold on. If I remember correctly, Dale, I'm gonna let you finish, but I want it to be known that this was me, Eric, and Daniel. Yeah, I think one of us got thrown through a wall. I think
Daniel.
But it was not a fight.
No, it was play.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Just want to make sure. Right.
Yeah.
So Mom and Dad, maybe against their better judgment, just wanted to attend this church meeting in peace. Left us to our own devices, which involved about 20 minutes before returning home, me and William wrestling around and him kind of tossing me around and getting a lot of momentum.
Weren't we playing? We were playing Ninja Turtles.
And I went. Backside first through the wall. Thank goodness there wasn't a stud there, and just put a 12-year-old sized hole in the
drywall. Yes. What did William try to mix baking soda and water?
That's my favorite part. So literally, Mom and Dad are going to be home in 20 minutes. We have a hole in the wall in the drywall, the size of like a 10 or 12-year-old.
And I will say, it didn't go all the way through. It was a dent. No. Yeah. It was a dent in the wall.
And Will is in the coming in from the garage with like a bucket of like spackle and drywall tape. I'm like, what are we going to do about this? But like the hope never faded that we could somehow cover this up. Like we could, with no previous experience at all doing any of this,
yeah,
somehow patch the drywall in a way that mom and dad would never notice.
I've never known that detail.
Here's the problem, and this is what I've discovered having kids, okay, is that kids think parents are so dumb. Kids think parents are so dumb. So there was no doubt in our mind that if we could, like, be reasonably close to matching the texture of the wall with a rudimentary form of spackle, hey, it's just like a normal wall. There's no child size hole in this wall. Nothing wrong here.
Which was that the one we moved that red cabinet like
that
back?
That was
in
our final solution.
Yeah.
When we
that there was like a clean space where you could see that the cabinet was originally.
Yeah.
Right. We moved it over.
And again, kids think parents are so dumb. So of course the first thing, so we think they'll never notice that we've shifted this thing over 3 feet, right? And first thing, Why is that cabinet right there? Right. I mean, it was.
Yeah. It didn't take any time at all, did it? Oh my goodness. And also, I mean, there was the choreographed lightsaber fights. Those were pretty cool.
Those are pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I also remember putting Michael in the dryer.
Yes. I was going to bring that one up.
Figuring out how to plug the.
Push the button.
Yeah. You push that close.
Trick the dryer to spin even with the door open.
I tell my students that story. They think it is hilarious.
I legitimately do have a memory of me actually going around and just seeing like five of my siblings.
Around is a knight's word.
Yeah, like it was. I just remember like you guys kind of looking this way, like just making sure. Like I think he's still alive. Actually, I think it was a success.
Yeah, because you had to brace yourself up. You had to brace yourself up with the fins in the dryer.
Yeah.
And once you got the bracing set, you're good to go. Right now we're rocking and rolling. And I remember initially it was just like, hey, wait, I think this will work. And we would just like push it and then stop it, and you would go whoop, and then back down.
Yeah.
But finally, we let it rip. And once we figured out, he's in there secure. We can do this. This is gonna work.
Was I a willing participant? Did I come willingly?
You were as willing as a 4-year-old could be, I think.
Having dinner and we were talking about, you know, what we're doing. You went, hey, going around the dryer is fun. And I went, what?
Yeah.
It is like that experience has been an awesome icebreaker throughout my whole life. Just bringing that up to people. They can't believe it.
Yeah. It's things like this. I try to explain to my kids, like, they ask, you know, what was it like growing up? And, you know, Ellie will lament having to be put in charge and things like that. And Ellie's like, well, don't you remember what it was like to have to be in charge of your siblings? I'm like, Ellie, you don't understand. My parents figured out that Stephanie was going to be in charge real quick. They figured that out real fast. They left me and Melanie. When mom and dad left, it was William and Melanie leave them alone. Stephanie's in charge. And we knew that. And we were fine with that. Like there's a reason why I was not given the responsibility. And it's because of shenanigans like holes in walls, kids in dryers, heads in toilets, things like that. Right.
But these are things that boys think up and that in their boy judgment think is a good idea. Right. So that's one of the first challenges of raising boys. And I remember one time William was home from college and Michael was still living at home and you guys were learning we're choreographing some sort of a song dance.
Oh yeah. NSYNC. Yeah.
NSYNC.
I don't know. Okay. Here's the weirdest thing about me is for a solid year and a half, I was like legit into learning choreographed NSYNC dances. Like I was like 100% like, yeah, this is what I want to do with my free time. Like I could like to the point where me and my buddies at school were like watching them, playing them back, doing the dances. I have no idea why. It's such a weird thing to look back on and be like I was really into like learning NSYNC dances.
And you could understand why we didn't want to learn them, right? Like
Hold on. Yeah, William, we were good. Like we nailed it.
Oh, I didn't know you jumped in there, Moose.
For like a 21-year-old and an 11-year-old, like we could pull it off pretty well, I thought.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sitting down in our family room, and the game room is upstairs above, you know, the floor of the game room is the ceiling of the family room. And I think there were more than just, I don't know. I can't remember what boys were home. And I don't know if Daniel, maybe you were involved in this as well. But
Daniel, weren't you? No, not as much.
I think really it was just me and like William.
Yeah. Maybe so. But I remember thinking, I mean, the roof, the ceiling was shaking. And I remember thinking, they don't ever get any more quiet. They just get bigger and louder. Like it just,
well, because you get more confident with the moves as you go. So yeah, you can make more noise.
Well, right.
Generally, boys do not get
true.
You know,
yes.
when they're gotcha. They're little and they're doing their capers and they're making noise and they're loud. You think, well, when they get older, but it is not true. They do not. Have your boys have begun any of their capers or escapades yet? Are they old enough that they've started trying?
Yeah. So there's a lot of like abandoned land where I live, right? Like, mm-hmm. And so there's this abandoned house. And Liam and his friends, they set up like this like camping site inside of that land.
Oh, right? My. Yeah.
And he comes home and I guarantee you we didn't give him this knife, right? He comes home and he
guarantee you we didn't give him this knife.
Right. Like
these are sentences like, you have to say when you have boys.
Right. He lifted almost a katana blade, like pulled out this big, huge machete. Right. And he's like, look what, right. Like he was so excited that he had found this. And I'm like, only in Cowley, Wyoming, can you find abandoned land and a big, huge machete that's gone unclaimed. Right. Like,
and this is probably a boy's dream. He probably felt like he won the jackpot.
Yeah. He thought it was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luke is really into Bigfoot hunting right now. And he, 100% legit believes that Bigfoot, that there's like small patches of forest, you know, all around us, mm-hmm. but like smack dab in the middle of like the YMCA and a neighborhood and a community park, there's like a little bit of field there, and he loves going Bigfoot hunting, and we'll go hiking and everything is evidence of Bigfoot, and he'll do howls and he'll be like, oh, I heard a howl back. They howled back, right? Like he started watching the Bigfoot Hunters on Discovery Channel, and now everything is like he will look legit. Say, let's go Bigfoot hunting, and so we'll load up in the truck and take our packs and go and just find like a
big hunt
trail Bigfoot. Around
yeah
Flower Mound, you know, Lake Grapevine up in Flower Mound or something like that, and and it's magical to him, and that is what's so fun is seeing mm-hmm. that everything is like magical to these kids, right? You don't want to like ruin that or spoil it, you know?
Right. And what fun memories you're making.
Yeah.
Anybody else before we move on?
Well, Manning's still young, right? He's two, but kind of what William was saying, just everything's magical. That's the phase he's in right now. Just mm-hmm. everything is magical, and everything with wheels, especially, just loves tractors, loves trains. And so, yeah, as even as a dad, like it's just so simple, but you don't want to spoil that magic for him too. Right. So like, mm-hmm. we'll go to there's like pumpkin patch farms with tractors that he can ride and jump on and just being a part of that while he's just like, just everything about life right now is just blowing his mind as a little 2-year-old is really, really fun.
Well, can you imagine waking up every day and every day something new that you've never seen
right.
before?
Totally. Right.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the challenges of raising boys. What are some of your biggest challenges? I'll throw my biggest challenge out and then we'll just kind of go from there if you want. Feeding you boys. That's my biggest challenge. Having to have enough food in the house so that you are full. And I don't know that I ever put you to bed at night full. I don't know that I ever accomplished it.
Mom, do you remember you'd be cooking dinner when I come home from school and I would literally pour a gigantic bowl of cereal like 15 minutes before dinner?
And I was what making dinner. I was like, Michael, I'm making dinner right now. And then you would say,
don't worry, I'll still be hungry.
And Daniel, you ran cross country. I don't think, were you ever full?
Never. No. I mean, I remember dad putting ice cream and protein shakes for me along with my breakfast. Yeah, and just eating and eating and eating and eating. I mean, boxes of cereal just get completely vaporized.
Right.
You know, peanut butter, can't put enough peanut butter in the house for all the sandwiches and stuff and granola bars and everything. It's just, you know, unbelievable how much I remember consuming, especially, you know, Eric and I were teenagers right around the same time too. So it was tough. And if we brought friends over, I mean, forget it.
Yeah. The whole house was cleaned out.
Yep.
I think too, with raising boys, boys are competitive.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so Eric and I, a lot of times would spend afternoons on the driveway playing basketball. Oh, I was my memory is a little hazy.
I was such a jerk.
Particular event. But I've been told that he and I fought over a rebound. That rebound, the momentum of that fight on the rebound sent Eric tumbling down the side yard. He complained about some pain in his wrist. I told him he was being not very tough. Get back up here and keep playing basketball. He instead walked in the house. You walked back out with him, told me that you two were on the way to the doctor, and he came back with a big red cast on his wrist. I'm not going to draw any conclusions from what happened. Dude,
this is what happened.
Daniel doesn't know what happened from the time that Eric went into the house and when he came back out. Who knows what happened? Anything could have happened.
Thank you, Will. No. Yes.
This is what happened is I was being like just overly mean, right? Like, cause I had hit a growth spurt, Daniel hadn't. So obviously I was going to dominate the kid. Right. Mm-hmm. And I just kept talking trash talk, you know, just as mean as can be. And lo and behold, he decides that maybe he's a little bit sick of it. And we both go for a rebound and, you know, I don't want to draw too many conclusions, but I definitely saw Daniel.
We can draw conclusions. I don't think we can. You know?
I think I remember seeing Daniel's foot in front of my feet.
Well, I mean, it's all hazy. It's all very hazy.
It was a long time ago, so I don't remember everything.
But I think
Eric remembers everything perfectly. That's what this conversation seems like.
No, the thing is I had it coming, right? Like, I don't think Daniel definitely didn't intend on breaking my arm, but I was being a real, like mom was saying, competitive, way too competitive.
I was just going to say, you know, I think that's it. I mean, I think raising boys, they tend to be more physical. They tend to express themselves, you know, Finn, my oldest, we had a phase where we'd just go to like Chick-fil-A and we'd let him go play at the play place afterwards. And he'd immediately walk in and just shove the first kid that he saw to the ground. And we were like, does he have like a dark heart? Like, what is wrong with this child? But they just tend to be more physical. And on the competitive note too, I mean, we try to struggle or we struggle to try, I should say, to teach Finn and all of our boys, it's okay to lose, right? It's okay to try your best and to not win at absolutely everything, and that there's a lot to be said about having the courage to go in. Like, Finn plays baseball a lot, so you know, if you give up a hit when you're pitching or you strike out, at least you had the courage to stand in there and try. And and otherwise the danger is, you know, Finn is the kind of personality where he would, unless he's sure he's going to win, he might not try something, you know. So having kind of those kinds of discussions with our boys about it's okay to lose and win, and it's all part of a learning process, I think, is really key as well, because that competitive spirit can sometimes dampen them from wanting to fail.
If I could piggyback off what Daniel said, I don't think you can understate the importance of teaching your kids to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, I see it all the time, doing martial arts with the kids, right? Like, Luke will go out and go on the mats and do, you know, jiu-jitsu with someone that he is obviously better than. I mean, just work the kid over. 3 minutes later, the round ends, and now he's with someone that is clearly better than him, and he gets smashed, right? And so talking who, you know, yeah, like you're better than that kid. That's fine. But why are you not, what is it that, why do you have such a hard time with that kid? Well, he's better than you. He trains more. He's more aggressive, right? Understanding, like, not just saying, hey, you know, you did your best and that guy, you know, he's bigger than you, right? Like, mm-hmm. But explain to them, it's not just because he's better than you. He works harder than you, right? And if mm-hmm. you want that, you will also need to work at it and try hard. We were at a tournament a year and a half ago, a Taekwondo tournament, and my kids were really disappointed because at the end, they didn't get any trophies. They didn't get any awards. They didn't get any accolades, nothing. They got nothing. Mm. And they were bummed. And rather than saying, it's just because whatever, make up excuses so that it's to sort of pad their ego. Mm-hmm. Jamie and I were like, you guys didn't do very well because you guys don't try hard. You guys don't practice. Mm-hmm. Those kids are there more. They're putting in the work. You can't expect to just walk out onto the mat and do your katas or win sparring or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You guys don't hardly, you know, you don't put in the work. Helping them understand there's a direct correlation between like losing and the amount of effort that you put in mm-hmm. towards actually trying to win. Right.
Right.
Like, yeah, you want to go out and do, even when you do go out and do your best, like what Daniel was saying, even when you do go out and do your best, you give up hits as a pitcher, you strike out. Right. But it's important to help them understand that losing, is a valuable tool in evaluating where your weaknesses are and learning how to become better at what you're right. Like if Luke just went out and just sparred, with kids that were his same, or worse, like, you know, or less experienced, he would never get better as a person.
I think so too. And I think teaching our children to accept responsibility and how to use a lose to get better.
I would just add to Will. I mean, I think that for you know, boys and girls, but you know, for our sons, for our young, you know, for the sake of this discussion, we're talking about raising boys. I think what Will's really talking about too is this idea of grit. You know, every generation bemoans how soft the younger generation is getting, and I think there's some reason for that. Like, technology makes life easier, and I'm not wishing for the days to come back where 95% of the country had to work a field all day, every day, just to have enough, you know, cornmeal to survive the winter. So I'm not advocating going back that far, but I think that, you know, what Will's talking about is finding opportunities and the things that they do to teach grit, resilience,
right,
hard work through what, in what a lot of ways amounts to boring, repetitive, deliberate practice.
Right.
And,
right.
And yeah, just right. Grit, just, you know, that grit, I guess.
When Luke comes off the mat and he got beat bad, right? Like just got tapped, you know, submission, tapped out, the kid was in control. I think the parent in me, the parent in me wants to say, like, oh, it's just because he's bigger than you.
Right. Mm.
But instead, here's what you can do to be better and to get better, right? Rather than saying, you had nothing to do with that. It wasn't your fault. It's okay. You know, it's not, you know.
Yeah.
I'm saying, this is why you lost. Here's what you can do to get better. And, you know, let's work on it together, right?
Yeah, I think that's really, really important, that because otherwise they get into the it's not my fault syndrome. And it may not be the better way to say that is that loss is my responsibility. And what can I do to do better next time? And what do I want to do to do better next time?
I just interjected a question. Sorry, I'm just kind of using this as a way to solicit free parenting advice. Because Manning right now is two, right? And the kid, he's kind of the opposite.
How's his jujitsu coming?
Not as like not as well as we'd like it to. Like, we expect more from him. But he's also the type of kid where at a playground, right? Like, he's the one like bending down, like picking flowers, you know, and the kids come and push him. And it's almost like, I almost feel a competitiveness with like the other dads, where I'm like, Manning, like, come, like, show him how you can jump. Like, show him, you know, like show him how many words you know. Like, just like to have a conversation, you know? So, like, there's that competitive that I have. But I love what you guys are saying about grit and stuff. And my question was, is there an, like, can you start helping your kid develop grit in a healthy, good way, even at, as young of an age as two, right? Like when does this process of helping them build resilience and grit start, if that makes sense?
I guess, you know, when Liam was young, I just loved watching him be young, right? And I let him just kind of go and experiment around with things and everything. Like, Liam was afraid of pine cones, right? When he was like two or three. And I just let him be afraid of pine cones for a while, you know, like, mm-hmm. I just think it's important to let them be kids for a while, you know.
And I think that there's a difference between that and, you know, what William is talking about.
Right.
When they're old enough to do something competitively and want to improve,
right,
it's a great time. Or, you know, you guys ran track, you ran cross country, all of those times give you an opportunity to help them have some resilience and accept responsibility and learn. It's kind of like teaching your children how to fail. You teach your children how to lose. Mm-hmm. So I think those times will come organically. I think at the same time, I think it's great to let them be kids and go hunt Bigfoot and be afraid of pine cones and all of that too. I think they both can go together.
And I think also, right, like there's the natural stuff, right? Like if Liam was afraid of a slide, I'd make sure he went down the slide, right? Like there's that sort of stuff. But as far as like, you know, critiquing and everything, I think William's right. Once they get to that age, it's okay. But like as far as making them feel, you know.
Like a two-year-old isn't going to understand.
Yeah, just let them be kids, right?
Like, yeah, I
agree. I guess if I can bring up a struggle, I think one of the things that I struggle with and I try really hard against it is like projecting what I want for Liam to be versus what he wants to be.
Mm.
Right. Like I was okay at sports, right? I was capable at sports, but you know, like sometimes Liam just doesn't want to be an athlete. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I have to really make sure that, you know, I foster growth in something, but allow him to choose what
it doesn't,
is.
It doesn't have to. Growth. Yeah. Growth and like learning grit and overcoming failures and losses is not solely sports centric.
Right.
It's
right.
Everything, right? It's schoolwork. It's relationships. There's a lot of it in sports and there's so many analogies that you can draw from sports to the real life, but no, it doesn't, certainly not. If the kid doesn't want to do sports, if he wants to pursue other things, like when I was learning to play guitar, like you go out and you do a show, an open mic night, and just bomb, take a nosedive. And if you have in you that, if you've been taught how to internalize that failure and not try to project that blame, oh, well, the audience just wasn't that into, or the audience, it was the wrong crowd for the music, whatever, you know, learn to take responsibility for that failure.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, what did I do wrong? How could I have, what could I do in the future to avoid doing that again? And then that grit, that what Daniel was talking about, to say, all right, now I know what to do. Do I have it in me? Do I have that, that dedication, that discipline to work on it? Right. And those are the sorts of lessons that we are trying to teach our kids, is how to develop that sense of, it's on me, it's my responsibility to get better.
And I mean, we teach our children resilience, how to come back from a fail, how to come back from a loss when those times come about. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say one thing, Mom, real quick. I mean, I would add too, our dad is such a tremendous example of taking an interest in whatever your kids are interested in.
100%.
I don't think dad ran cross country, you know, in high school, or even really had much of an interest in it. But when we started running, I mean, he was up at 5:30, 6 in the morning. You guys are driving all over the Dallas-Fort Worth area, to go watch our cross country meets, see us disappear behind some trees for like 15 seconds.
Yeah, those
cross the finish line, give us a hug, and then we'd go hang out with our friends, and you guys would drive home like an hour, you know. And yeah. but I always felt that dad really cared about my success and was into it. We talked about, you know, everything, all the ins and the outs, and he became an expert at it. So, you know, back to Eric's comment about, you know, Liam wanting to do other things, I think, you know, raising boys, it's important to, you know, whether that's music or sports or art or computer programming or whatever they're into, to really take an interest in what they're learning and doing and become sort of a mini expert, which dad is so good at. You know, he's maybe the best at becoming a mini expert in so many things, doing that too, so you can stay connected with your boy and show your love and support. So I think that's really important too.
I don't know if you remember this, Mom, but you remember when I like played guitar for like 6 months, I started a band and we were like terrible, like in high school. And we just played this terrible.
It might be there Mom, somewhere in my memory
your
bank.
Not Mom's.
But I just really, just the same thing what Daniel was saying about dad. Like I remember playing these shows with like 9 people in the audience and we were terrible. And I'd look over and I'd see you, Mom, sitting there attending our shows. And I'm like, Mom has, she does not need to be here listening to this. In fact, most people don't need to be here listening to this, but yeah, like, I don't know. So that I just want to echo what Daniel was saying, the impact that had on me personally.
Yeah. Another thing, Michael, that you can do is, or like for me with Luke, I'll say, dude, that was awesome. You did fantastic. I'm really proud of you. I will ask Luke questions about what happened in a way that it's self-discovery where he's like, oh yeah, I guess I didn't, you know, I didn't That's get my cool. hip up. Yeah. I didn't get my hips up on the triangle or, oh yeah, I guess, you know, my strumming pattern could be a little bit more percussive, right? Whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do, you don't have to, like, you can help them discover their weaknesses without being overbearing and destructive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can be a collaborative process of figuring out what they did wrong and a way to get better.
Yeah.
And that way you're both invested in the process.
Yeah. That's awesome. Those guiding questions are key. And we're just learning that too. So we're, you know, instead of stating you did this, you did this, you did this, you did this, asking them, and that self-discovery process just totally empowers them and helps them on that discovery process. And it's just really good. Yeah. So Will, that's really awesome.
That's awesome. Ask those
guiding questions.
I think so too. And I think one of the keys to, I mean, certainly raising boys, raising girls as well, is, you know, William, when Ellie was little, you had in your family, you would say, we're on the same team, guys, we're all on the same team. And I think if your boys know that you back them, you're there for them, you're on the same team, those conversations of self-discovery are a lot easier and get better results if they know you've got their back and that you know that you're there for them.
Michael, another thing too is that you're going to know your son. You're going to know your child really well. And so even though I'm going to use an example, this isn't about Luke, it's about Ellie, but I think the principle applies. Mm-hmm. And that is, sometimes you do have to be tough, right? Ellie struggles with some learning disabilities, like specifically ADHD. And I was not a believer in ADHD. I thought it was a fake thing that parents made up to excuse their child's struggles or whatever, until I had a child to struggle with it. But Ellie will use it to try to get out of doing stuff. Oh, well, I can't do it. It's too hard or whatever, right? But Michael, you're going to know your kid and you're going to know what they're capable of. And sometimes you do have to call them out on it and be like, you know, I'll sit down with Ellie and I'll say, look, I understand that some of these things do come more difficult for you, but I know what you're capable of. And this work is not, this is not satisfactory. This work is not, I mean, and really just let them know that what they're doing is they are not living up to what their capabilities are, right? They're not living up what their potential is, and to not use, oh, well, I have ADHD, right? I can't do all I can't do this math. I can't focus on this for 20 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But you know, you'll know your kid and you'll know the limits that you can push them to. And that includes kind of being tough, you know, and yeah. not letting them get away with shenanigans.
And the realization awesome. That they can do hard things. Mm-hmm. I want to kind of move on. And I want to just take a few minutes and talk about boys and video games. Now, you guys all played video games when you were kids. Yeah. Now, we didn't have all the, you know, about screens and screen time. And, you know, we just had a little 13-inch TV downstairs hooked up to the Mario Brothers, and you guys played. I knew that you needed to get off the game when chairs were being thrown and tempers were being lost. I'd send you outside to play. That was how I...
Reliable indicator.
Could I just start out by taking this time just to thank all my brothers for always letting me watch you guys play video games?
And, anytime, Michael. Just anytime.
And the way you would unplug the controller and hand it to me and say you're doing so good, it really meant a lot to me. So thank you.
I really enjoyed watching.
You knew about that, Michael? You knew about that? That was an unplugged controller?
After a while, I did, but I was just so excited to be with you guys, so I just ate it up.
I remember watching Daniel and William play Web Woods, right? For like, you remember that on Donkey Kong?
Yeah. With
the little, oh man.
Yeah, anyway, that was probably one of the chair throwing episodes that mom
right, maybe yeah. had
been referring to. I mean,
take
that.
Take a break. So, yeah. I mean, I will just start by saying nothing that anybody says on this podcast is going to offend me. So, whatever anyone's beliefs are on video games, you know, let it fly. I'm not going to be you know, offended by it. We certainly still play them. Finn plays them. One of the things that we look for when he plays is he getting bored of them? You know, so if Finn's playing a game, he gets a new game for Christmas or his birthday or whatever. And he plays it for like 2-3 days straight. He loves it. But then after a couple weeks or whatever, he's kind of bored of it. Mm-hmm. Then we know like that's like pretty good. That's a good indicator that it's a thing, just like any toy that they love, the kids love, and then they kind of get bored of it and move on to something else. Then that's probably good. We don't really have, super strict screen limits or times in our home. We just kind of, again, do the sort of the behavioral checks that you talk about, Mom. Mm-hmm. And we do try to make sure that they're out playing, for a decent chunk of every day. They've got little Fitbits, or like Garmin Vivo Kid Fits that mm-hmm. keep track of their steps, and they have step goals and they earn coins for hitting those step goals. And we try to encourage that happening as well. And then again, we just look for that. Okay, they're you know, they're getting bored. There's not this sort of unhealthy obsession with video games. So yeah. I don't know, for whatever that's worth, that's not like a super bloggable approach to it, but that's kind of how we do it.
Yeah. I think what Daniel's talking about is maintaining a balance, right? So
yeah.
And again, I'm the same as Daniel. I love video games. I don't have any problems with my kids spending time playing video games.
Yeah, I didn't either. And I know that now, you know, you've got phones and tablets and, you know, you do have to kind of watch that screen time. But I mean, I played video games with you guys.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So, I mean, it's games, right? Whether it's on a screen or whether it's a, you know, a card game or a board game, mm-hmm. right? It's recreation. It's a form of recreation. But I think as parents now, there's a difference between, see, I think I don't know if we're talking about two different things. I think we're talking about video games and then mm-hmm. we're also talking about screen time, and screen time, is something that Jamie and I are super concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
And limiting, especially Ellie and now Luke, now Luke's getting into, you know, playing mm-hmm. Roblox, and there's chat features with strangers, and there's the, you know, pressures of, you know, Ellie posting stuff on social media, and there. So I think no matter what, parents need to be involved, whether it's video games or screen mm-hmm. time or anything, parents need to be involved, but there's a need to stress to your kids, teaching them early about balance and why it's important to be balanced as a person, and to, like what Daniel said, take a break, go outside and play. I scrape your knees, get into trouble. You genuinely want that, right? And so, and when they spend 3 hours outside playing, it's a lot easier as a parent for them to then for me to allow them to just come inside and veg out and play video games for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess first of all, I have nothing wrong with video game, Liam Lowe's video games. I play, right? Like, that's not what I'm going. But I guess, like, when I see the moving out of childhood and young adolescence and then into, high school.
We should say here that you teach high school English, so you have a front row seat.
Yeah. So I see kind of the product of childhood video games, right, in a way. And you know, every kid is different. The only thing that worries me is that these kids, you know, not everyone, but a good majority of them don't know how to be bored, right? Like, they can't sit through an English class, which is boring, without needing some entertainment, without needing something to kind of stimulate them. And so, you know, I don't have a policy on video games in my family, like, at all. But, you know, it is worrisome to see a generation where kids can't sit through a class because they don't have something flashing before their eyes or anything like that. It is pretty interesting.
If a child is never bored, they're never going to pick up a book. If a child is never bored, you know, they're never going to pick up, you know, crayons and paper and draw. And I'm totally stealing this from a Facebook thing, but I think it's so true. You know, if a child is never bored, they're not going to learn how to play with their, you know, to use their imagination. And so I think it's really important.
Yeah, we'll unplug the internet, and the kids complain. But 30 minutes later, we'll go upstairs, and Nora's in playing with her toys, and Luke's, you know, looking at a comic book, and we're like, "What's happening here?" It's the kids figure out something to do to occupy their time. They're capable of doing it, right? I mean,
they're very capable of doing it, and they're capable of coming up with the idea. I mean, not to get off on a tangent of boredom, but in our house, if you told me you were bored, what did you do?
I had to strip wallpaper.
Yeah, chores, right? Chores. Yeah, I do it with my kids too. I'm bored. Oh, okay. Well, let's go talk to mom real quick. We'll figure out something for you to do. Yeah. Never mind. And they're gone.
Right. I cannot wait to use that line on my kids. I'm so excited.
Have just a few more years and then you can do it. You have to call me and tell me when you've been able to use that line.
I do swallow your spit. I do, there's carrots and apples in the refrigerator. I do it all. All of it. I salute, I bow, everything. I'm telling you.
That's funny. Okay. To the very end, what I'd like to talk about, you know, Michael and I recorded our podcast. We did a podcast together last night. And we brought up the point, we don't raise children, we raise adults. And I'd like to kind of, I really like that. And so I would like to say we don't raise boys, we are raising men. And I think a lot of the things that we've talked about do feed into that idea that we are raising men, we're raising fathers, we're raising husbands. What can a mom do to help sons grow up to be men? What are some things?
Sorry, I don't mean to just jump in, but I think a lot of the problems that some of our boys have in our high school is that the mom is way too compliant. Sometimes I feel like I say no to my kids just because they need to hear the word no, you know? So I think moms definitely need to realize that, you know, they're setting a pattern of respect, right? If a mom says no, then they need to learn how to just say, okay, that's what mom says. Because boys don't end up respecting women because they don't have a strong or equal female presence in their life as their dad. So that's been my experience.
Okay.
We kind of talked about it on the podcast with me and you, Mom, but just taking a different dimension with it. Michelle is really good at teaching Manning empathy. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it a little bit, but one thing we didn't discuss is one thing she's doing awesome right now is we're having a baby in like 3 weeks. And so Michelle is really awesome at, like bringing Manning in and like having him like talk to his little brother and saying stuff mm-hmm. like you're going to be such a good older brother. Like, are you going to look out for your younger brother and getting Manning excited. And I think that's one thing that's really important to us. We wanted to teach Manning really early on that he is a protector, right? Mm-hmm. He's someone who's going to be in charge of helping to raise this little brother, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that can start young, and I think it's really important for a young boy to get that as he grows up into a man.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that it's important for parents, and so this is equally important for the mom to do and the dad to work at together. But that is to always present a unified front.
Mm-hmm.
So when Luke comes to me and says, "Dad, can I do this or whatever? Mom said I can't," blah, 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 blah. My response is, "Well, your mom said you can't." Mm-hmm. So I support your mom. That's it, always, right? And so making sure that they know that that Jamie and I are always a team. And what she says, I say. Like, that's, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And if Jamie and I have, you know, if it's something where I'm like, oh, well, actually, that'd probably be fine. The answer is no, because Jamie said so. But then Jamie and I will talk separately, mm-hmm. privately, right? Mm-hmm. And I think us kids, we always saw that from you and Dad, which was, yeah. Mom and Dad are always a team. We're never going to pit them against each other. They're always presenting a unified front and dealing with kids and making decisions and, you know, and being in control of the household.
Yeah. Dad and I, that was something Dad and I really worked on. And one time Melanie tells the story that she had asked if she could do something and I had told her no. And she thought, well, Dad's going to let me. And she, of course, didn't know that I had talked to Dad during the day. So he already knew what my answer was. And she went up to Dad and said, "Hey, can I do whatever it was she wanted to do?" And Dad said, "No, your mom's already said no." And I say no. And she felt so thwarted. She thought she had such a great plan. But I think that also shows respect, because we need to teach our sons to respect their mothers, respect women. It's a good example of respect for their mother when you are a team, same team, going back to that.
So you all know my wife, Natalie, is not timid or shy in any way. And she does a fabulous job of speaking directly to our boys, in a way that makes even uncomfortable subjects comfortable. She's open, mm-hmm. honest, and very communicative about things that, you know, might be particularly sensitive or quote unquote awkward. And she just makes them not awkward by being direct and open. And mm-hmm. she fosters this really open and natural communication, even with our 9-year-old son, to the point where, you know, I think that she's doing just a terrific job of hopefully building a foundation for as he gets older and becomes a preteen and a teenager, et cetera, he's not going to feel weird about going to his mom,
right,
to talk about things he hears in the locker room or hears at school or stuff he doesn't understand or mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff that can be kind of uncomfortable. Natalie's doing, I think, just a, you know, really, really a great job at making it so that, mm-hmm. you know, our boys feel open to talk to her as well as myself about just about life in general, you know, all the whole gamut.
What do you guys think about about moms issuing the threat of wait till your dad gets home? And I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Is that productive
it.
Or is that?
I don't like it at all. Well, I'm not a huge fan of moms not taking a, not having the respect from their kids that their punishment is just as valid as the dad's, mm-hmm. or that even they should be afraid of their dad. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that also puts the dad kind of in the authoritarian position, which then means moms can't handle or deal out punishment.
Yeah.
Right. Which I think is very damaging for boys to think.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Eric kind of nailed what I was thinking, right? I think it communicates two things that I'm unsettled with, right? That the fact that the dad is just this harsh disciplinarian and that the mom mm-hmm. doesn't foster that, mm-hmm. doesn't get that same type of respect from their kids. So I think I disagree with Eric.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to same team, you know, the parents are on the same team. We're on the united front. And to Daniel's comment about Natalie having good open discussions with her sons. And I think that's healthy. I think that's a great way to do it.
I think that as dads also, we can make an extra effort of defending our wives in front of the kids mm-hmm. when they mouth off.
Yeah.
I act like I do take it personally. Right. And mm-hmm. I will jump in. And even if they do something and they mouth off, and even if Jamie just kind of blows it off, mm-hmm. I step in and I say, that what's going on here? You are not to talk to your mom like that at all.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think that taking that extra effort to show that was not okay, very upsetting. Right.
Yeah.
I think the kids then understand the level of respect that they're supposed to show their mom because they see that coming from the dad.
Yeah. And I think we did the exact same thing here in our family, and part of it and why it, you know, it's such a big point of emphasis that we talk to mom with respect is because as a kid, you just are so clueless, you know, about what moms go through to provide, you know, a loving environment, you know, together with, you know, husband and wife working as equals. But you just see now that you're married and you see women, you know, carry these babies for 9 months and just go through the miracle of bringing them into the world and all the pain and sacrifice that goes into rearing these children that only a mother can do. It really instills, I think, a sense of reverence in me. So that way, when, like what Will's saying, you do take it personally when they are disrespectful, mm-hmm. you know, to your wife. And I think whatever we can do as dads to foster that same reverence early. I mean, I don't think kids are ever really going to get it until they go through it, you know, mm-hmm. and see and just kind of understand just how wonderful these mothers are, how amazing they are and what they do day in, day out. But whatever we can do to help them clue into that early, I think is really important to do. And that starts with stepping in, like Will's talking about, whenever you see, you know, them being particularly disrespectful to their mom, to just mm-hmm. you know, explain to them.
And the other side of that coin is making sure that the kids see their dads being really affectionate with mm-hmm. their mom.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like I will make a point like to smooch with Jamie and to hold her and to hug her and to tell her I love her in front of the kids so that they see that is mm-hmm. the way that you treat, you know, you're a woman, your wife, you know, mm-hmm. to make sure to, when we're all sitting down and dinner's finishing up and the kids are finishing up, I will make sure to, you know, lean in and give Jamie a big hug and tell her that dinner was awesome and thank you and give her a smooch on the cheek and make sure that the kids see that mm-hmm. and that they understand that is what, you know, a healthy husband and wife relationship is like. And so that it makes sense to them mm-hmm. that Jamie and I are not able to be pitted against each other, or that I would take it personally when Luke mouths off to Jamie and says something disrespectful, it makes sense to them because they see how much that, you know, how much affection Jamie and I have for each other. Make sure the kids see that. We want the kids to be like, oh, good, you guys are good, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, that's good. And I saw that all the time growing up with right. mom and dad.
Yeah, I agree with Will, despite being traumatized by the same behavior coming from right. my own parents.
For sure.
My official position is I agree with Will.
I legitimately wanted to throw up when I saw mom and dad doing it, but at the same time, it was one of the most impactful things I think I ever could have been shown as a young man, if that makes sense, you know? So I totally agree with what you're saying. It's awesome.
Well, and I agree 100% with what you're saying. I will say though that we would wait until one of you kids came around the corner and then smooch just to get the reaction.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Oh,
how dare you?
How dare you?
I knew it.
I know. Suspicions confirmed.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, this has been a great conversation.
If I can just add one thing, I think our dad deserves mm-hmm. a shout out to that, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah,
I think if I could be a third of the man my dad is, then I would consider my life a success. You've had an excellent dad kind of showing us how to do things.
Yeah, that's nice. And so true. So true. He's a good dad and continues to be, and he loves you and is proud of you. And this has just been so much fun. So thank you so much for being on tonight. And, I want to thank our listeners for spending some time with us, and please check out my website at onemomtoanother.com for articles, recipes, and other fun stuff. And my book is available at Amazon. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, and always remember, you are doing better than you think.